WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Satirist Harry Shearer has been chronicling President Clinton's career in an ongoing series of sketches called Clinton Something, which is part of Shearer's nationally broadcast public radio program, Le Show. Harry also has a forthcoming book called Why People Hate Clinton. Harry Shearer is an alumnus of Saturday Night Live and does many of the voices on The Simpsons. We called him to talk about the Starr Report and its aftermath. I think that in some ways the Starr Report and the video testimony is changing how people talk about sex and what they feel comfortable talking about. I'll use myself as an example. I was having dinner in a deli the other night, having, I thought, a fairly loud conversation about oral sex, and the subject of the conversation was the president. And, you know, you don't usually talk about oral sex in a, you know, fairly loud voice in a restaurant.
You that's such a relief. I thought you were going to tell me that they'd already named a sandwich after Monica Lewinsky. I am so relieved.
It's on rye bread.
Yeah, and it's got tongue. I know that. Given what we overhear being talked about loudly in delis out here, at least I would say that would be refreshing change. It's deals, screenplays and deals. Bill Clinton has been nervy enough to say at one of his appearances on the Road to Contrition that he thought this journey he was on, was good for Americans, and if you grant him that, I guess one of the ways is that it has, got anchormen saying semen stains without blushing. The word semen stains without blushing now, which has been good for them at least.
But it's interesting. On the one hand, I think people are speaking more openly about sex. On the other hand, there's this feeling that the sex police are out there now.
Yes. Well, I think that something, maybe the truest thing that was said about this entire case was said very early on, when Joe DiGenova, the Republican former independent counsel on his own and known Republican, noted Republican Washington lawyer, said of the independent counsel's tactics in this case, Ken Starr's office is not doing anything that prosecutors around the country don't do every day. I think what people may have felt as they heard these unseen voices in the videotape asking these incredibly intrusive questions after all of the tactics that we've seen is, my God, this could happen to me. And I think, one of the things we've seen is that the heritage of 20 years of widening prosecutorial power in the name of the war on drugs or the war on organized crime has resulted in a sort of a scary deal here.
Well, Harry, the question I've always been meaning to ask you, I guess this is the appropriate interview. How do you define sex?
It depends what you mean by define.
Well, you're somebody who has to deal with language all the time because,
mm-hmm.
you have a very good...
I mangle it for humorous purposes.
Yes, exactly. So what do you think of the definition that was used in the Paula Jones case that the president has had to use?
Well, I think, in a way, one of the things that it was possible to see in the videotape is that a definition that up till now had seemed like it was imprisoning the president in some kind of legalistic artifice of his own devising is, in fact, something very fortunate that was handed to him by the Paula Jones lawyers. And if, as Jackie Bennett Jr. sort of ruefully asked, if they'd asked him directly about oral sex, would he have answered truthfully? And he said yes. I think it serves as an example of bad lawyering by the people who were representing Paula Jones, that they got themselves boxed into having to live by that definition and didn't see fit to ask the president a direct and clearly worded question at the deposition. We might not be here if they had. Well, I'd be here. I own this place.
Were you uncomfortable watching the president's testimony?
No. I was on the couch for most of it, which is a comfortable place for me. But no, I didn't feel badly for him because he was handling himself pretty well. I have just gone through my own civil lawsuit. So I know what it's like to testify and to give a deposition. I've been through those circumstances recently. You know, you learn in a situation like that, that if you try to be discursive in your answers, two things will happen. Either your lawyer will tell you, don't offer anything, just answer the question, yes, no, or I don't know. And if you try to be discursive to run out the clock, as I think Clinton was in a lot of that, the opposing lawyer will normally say something to rein you in. And I think what was remarkable was that the lawyers from the independent counsel's office, while they asked antagonistic questions, and questions that certainly had a prosecutorial motive behind them, to say the least, really didn't have the nerve to say, Mr. President, please just concentrate on answering the question and don't offer me, you know, a 3.5-minute explanation. So in that sense, he was very effective in sort of taking control of the situation.
I ask what your case was about?
Oh, I was suing, I'm going to be redundant here, some jerk producers. It's the only one of the few civil, according to my attorney, it was the only civil case he'd ever heard about that ended in a draw.
Huh. Interesting. So, are you tired of this story? I mean, do you hope that it ends soon?
Well, I have two feelings about that. As a person who draws comedy from it, I hope it goes on forever. As a citizen, you know, I think that there's nothing is going to be more ludicrous in the annals of American history than the Supreme Court 9-0 decision ruling that a civil case wouldn't disrupt the presidency if it proceeded while the guy was still in office. I think people are going to look back at that case and then what ensued and go, what were those guys thinking?
Harry, you know, one of the people who you're sharing our show with today is Bob Dole, who has a new book called Great Political Wit. And it's a book about political wit over the years, quips and so on made by presidents and presidential candidates over the years. And I'm wondering if you've thought of Bob Dole as a wit.
Yeah, I often thought of Bob Dole as a wit. I thought that was sort of the sad story of his presidential campaign was a basically inherently witty guy who had been told by all his handlers, stay serious, don't do that. And I thought that, you know, the unfortunateness of that campaign was that you could see him straining to keep his natural tendency to wisecrack under control, because it had cost him in previous campaigns. And you get around risk-aversive people in a political campaign, and wit is not risk-aversive. I felt badly for him in that circumstance. And I'm also relieved for him that Newt Gingrich doesn't need his $300,000.
Right. Are you imagining the possibility in the future of hearings in which Monica Lewinsky is called to testify about whether the president really touched her on the breast or genitals?
Well, you see, I think this is... I have a bet with several people that the president will resign sooner rather than later, and that's not based on where I think public opinion is at, but based on my estimate high... that is of the cowardice level of Democratic members of Congress confronting the prospect that you've just asked about. I just see in growing numbers Democrats going to the White House saying, Mr. President, I can't be on national television when those questions are asked, let alone have a staff member of mine put in front of me a question like that for me to ask myself. I can't be in that position. And the last really great thing you can do for the Democratic Party, aside from coming and helping us raise more money, is to not put me in that position. And I foresee that happening more and more as they look into the future and consider that prospect. I think it frightens the hell out of Democrats in Congress.
Bill Bennett said something to the effect that it was okay to put the Starr report on the internet because the material may have been salacious, but it's not titillating.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that, you know, the way the Starr report was written, he couldn't imagine anybody reading it and being, you know, aroused by it.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on that?
I just got a great mental picture of Bill Bennett trying to imagine people getting aroused.
That's the odd thing about the story, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Well, I mean, it does call upon. I think that the first, and I still think the primary danger to President Clinton in the wake of the August 17th speech is, it seems to me that it's still true, and he hasn't disproved it yet, that he's moved beyond the realm of the single entendre, and that's pretty dangerous for a president.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, every time he makes a speech, you know, his writers have to just be on double duty to excise any words that could have anybody in the listening audience muffling a chortle, you know. And that list of words is pretty long at this point. I don't need to be explicit.
Right.
But that's a fairly dangerous position for a president, you know, who's, especially one like this, whose basic, you know, with a Congress dominated by the opposition party, whose basic weapon at this point is words. And so many of his words have been taken away from him because they induce laughter in the listenership.
Harry Shearer. He hosts the nationally broadcast public radio program Le Show. You can also hear it on his website at www.harryshearer.com. His forthcoming book is called Why People Hate Clinton.